Thank you. We'll go on to case number 3042433, Peter J. Kaufman versus Federal Express. Good morning, Mr. Olson.
Good morning, Your Honor.
You've cleared the courtroom, Mr. Olson.
Excuse me?
You've cleared the courtroom. I think I cleared the courtroom.
Well, may have.
They're all fleeing.
May it please the court. My name is Douglas Olson. I appear on behalf of the plaintiff, Peter Kaufman, the appellant in this case. We're appealing the decision of the district court granting a motion for summary judgment for the defendant.
I'm just going to ask you something right off the bat so it's all clear in my head. How many days of work did Mr. Kaufman actually miss in the end? Because there are references to January 2, 3, and 4, but also a claim that he could not work until January 7 or 8. So, was it exactly
he missed
3 days, or was it more than three, as is required by statute?
He was ill for more than three calendar days. He actually missed work for 3 days, but the statute says he must be ill for three or greater calendar days. His illness began on January 1, 2002, continued through January 6, 2002. So it was greater than the three calendar days, and was disabled or unable to work for that period.
Now, FedEx had a note from the doctor's office saying he could return to work on the 3rd. Why wouldn't that allow FedEx to conclude that Kaufman did not have a serious health condition?
Well, FedEx did conclude that he put them on notice that he had a serious health condition, because after they received that note on the 7th of January, they gave him FMLA documents to fill out and to return, telling him that he had 15 days in which to return these documents. These documents were placed in his mail, and he received them on the evening of that day. And so FedEx, you know, considered this to be a potential FMLA case and treated it that way. In addition, there's numerous emails where they viewed his condition as a potential FMLA case and discussed it amongst themselves as such. There's no question as to notice to them as to FMLA. And the question gets down to whether or not the documents which he submitted qualified him for FMLA benefits. This is one of those usual cases where the underpinnings of Aubuchon and Stoops, which the court relied on, state that an employee may not attempt to mousetrap the employer into the granting of FMLA leave. We believe the facts in this case will show that the employer attempted to mousetrap the employee into forfeiture of those rights. Beginning with his illness on January 1st, which was a holiday, he was unable to work. And the physical evidence as to how he was ill is uncontroverted. The question we get is, what does the document support his claim? Beginning as early as January 3, FedEx had opened a file called Pete/FMLA and then began to communicate to each other. When I say FedEx, I mean their Moline managers. Began to communicate to each other as that this was an opportunity, a window of opportunity in which to terminate Mr. Kaufman. On the 7th, they gave him forms. Initially, in the morning, they gave him the wrong forms, and then agreed to put the correct forms in his mailbox, which he picked up that evening.
And it was his supervisor that suggested fill out those forms.
Correct. Mr. Crownover. And so my client received the forms in his mailbox that evening. And the forms in question were the health care provider certification form and the notice and eligibility form. Both forms are required to be submitted, both by law and by FedEx, in order to qualify for family and medical leave. Once he received those forms, he took them to his doctor, a Dr. Seitz, who filled out the forms, gave them back, and on January 10, he turned in both forms and placing them on Mr. Crownover's desk under a stapler in the presence of another employee. As far as Mr. Kaufman's concerned, everything is fairly quiet beyond that. He has an argument with Mr. Kuda, the senior manager, over the appealability of denials of FMLA. But beyond that, there was really no communication between Mr. Kaufman and the company until his termination on January 22, 2002, at 8:10 a.m. Prior to that, within the 15 days which the law provides an employee to submit a health care certification, they had calculated his absences as absences, not FMLA days. They had prepared the termination documents, and as they even admit, they made errors of law and judgment in deciding to terminate him on the beginning of the 15th day rather than the end. The termination meetings were fairly short. They used the notice and eligibility form, which he handed in on the 10th, the actual form, which they had denied that they had. He had filled out parts B and C of that form, so his handwriting was on that form, and they previously had possessed that form. They also denied in the process that they had ever received the certification form filled out by Dr. Seitz on January 8. Therefore, stating, writing on the notice of eligibility form, we deny FMLA leave because Pete failed to submit FMLA documents within the time required. Any FMLA documents. This proved to be false. Okay. Pete takes an appeal. The company has what is called a fair treatment process, where you can appeal, have a three-step appeal of employment actions you deem unfair. And this process also allows employees to submit documents in support of their appeal. His first step appeal was filed on January 26, 2002. As the case progresses on this appeal, up out of their local area, a Mr. Thornton, who was charged with the appeal, had decided on him on February 6 to reinstate him with back pay on the basis of the fact that they had received the certification notices and it was untimely. In other words, they had discharged him within the 15 days. That decision was opposed by Moline Management. Mr. Thornton then consulted legal counsel and in Memphis, and that legal counsel came up with a second basis for termination. At that point, in the afternoon of February 6, a letter was written and sent to Mr. Kaufman, which he received on February 7. That letter set forth a different and new basis for termination. It first acknowledged that there was confusion with respect to the timing of his termination, and also admitted that he had submitted the FMLA forms. Then they came up with a second basis for his termination, that being that the health care certification form was not sufficient to establish that he had an FMLA serious health condition. And they focused on paragraph 4A, which is a three-part question. And the first part of that question says, state the onset of the condition. And the doctor wrote in January 1, 2002. The rest of the question says, state the duration. and the doctor didn't fill in the other two blanks. There was actually three questions there. If you read the entire document front and back, it will show you that he was off for three or more days with a serious health condition, and that on page 2, that condition was disabling and he was unable to work. But FedEx pounced on the failure of the doctor to fill in the last two blanks or the other two blanks on the duration question. Mr. Kaufman received that letter on the afternoon of February 7, 2002. Immediately he acted. On the 11th, he notified the company in writing that he was going to take a second stage appeal. He notified them that he's going to submit additional medical opinion, and he'll try to get that when he filed the appeal, if he could. After that, he got an addendum to the certification, which answered the duration question and went on to others. And that addendum was sent to the company on February 23, 2002. The company had sent him a letter saying that if you have any additional documentation to support your appeal, submit it with this letter February 23, which he did. He sent then this February 23 addendum to the healthcare certification to FedEx overnight mail. On March 4, they sustained the initial discharge on January 22. Again, he appeals to the last step of the procedure, and they sustained the original discharge on January 22 on March 20, 2002. Thus, he was required to defend against two stated reasons and to establish that both stated reasons were pretextual. Now, on the first part of an FMLA case, you don't have to prove intent. You have to prove substantive violations of FMLA law. There are a number of them which were violated on the 22nd. First of all, they didn't give him the full 15 days in which to submit a healthcare certification. They admit that. In addition, they considered three FMLA documents and where he was qualified for FMLA leave and counted those in their program to terminate him. The court found that the addendum was sufficient if you considered it. However, the court felt that the addendum had to come in before the decision to terminate. Well, there are multiple decisions to terminate here. January 22, February 6, March 20, and March 4. Which decision to terminate?
Those aren't separate decisions. There's one decision, and it was appealed through the internal appellate procedures established by the company, which have nothing to do with the FMLA.
Well, the trouble with that is the company abandoned its January 22 decision bases when it came up with a second basis on February 6.
Well, that's just an alternate construction of what occurred. What they did is they upheld the termination on alternate grounds.
On alternate grounds. And at that point, once they did that and they raised the issue of whether or not it was a complete, incomplete, insufficient certification, then the time our client had to act under this court's decision in Stoops was when he became aware of that decision, that alternate grounds. And we submit, unlike Stoops, who never did act, this court held that the time for Mr. Kaufman to act was when he became aware of the alternative decision, the reliance on a negative, complete certification. And he acted within hours, unlike Mr. Stoops. And he provided, as the district court acknowledged, sufficient medical opinion following him being put on notice to establish that he was qualified for FMLA leave. I've gone into my rebuttal time. I'm sorry.
Mr. Gritdow, good morning.
Good morning, ma'am. May it please the court, my name is Jay Gritdahl with the Federal Express Legal Department, Memphis, Tennessee, here on behalf of Federal Express. And we are today asking the court to affirm the decision of the district court granting summary judgment with regard to Mr. Kaufman's FMLA claims.
Can we start by looking at the certification Mr. Kaufman filed? Because the claim here is that the doctor certified illness for at most one day, January 1st. But when I look at the form, I see that the doctor filled out Section 3C, which certified incapacity of more than 3 days. On summary judgment, I'm wondering how we can reconcile the seemingly different answers to questions 3 and 5. The most natural explanation seems to be that the doctor didn't completely fill out question 5, and so the form is incomplete. And if the form is incomplete or ambiguous, then the employer is statutorily obliged to clarify before denying leave. Do you see where I am?
Yes, Your Honor.
3C, incapacity more than 3 days. That's the answer to 3C. Now, it's true that the answer to 5 is state the approximate date the condition commenced and the probable duration of the condition, and also the probable duration of the patient's present incapacity. If different, the doctor has 1-1-2002. But having in Section 3C said it's, you know, duration of more than 3 days, you've got an ambiguous certification here, seems to me.
Your Honor, it's our position that the form was not ambiguous and that it is complete based on the criteria established by the statute. It contains information with regard to onset, duration, the medical facts supporting the condition, and a statement that he's unable to perform the essential functions of his job. I suggest that there is a difference between simply checking a box and actually filling out a narrative form of a narrative part of the form, in which the doctor has affirmatively represented that the duration, the onset and duration of the condition is only going to be for 1 day, which is consistent with the return to work slip that he had previously provided to the employer.
Will you help me, please? Because I truly cannot imagine anything more ambiguous than incapacity of more than 3 days due to a serious health condition that also involves treatment 2 or more times by a health care provider or treatment by a health care provider on one occasion, which results in a regimen of continuing treatment, and the doctor's written in bronchitis.
Yes, Your Honor.
Incapacity of more than 3 days. Now, it's true that down at question 5, he's written one date in, which is 1-1-2-0-0-2. But that's an ambiguity. That's an ambiguity.
Well, Your Honor, it's perhaps it's you know, I guess I would be more willing to concede the point that it's ambiguous if the doctor had actually checked the block. I got an indication that he put down what the serious health condition was when he put down the word bronchitis. He put it down in the part of the form, you're correct, under block C, which is not checked. It says, is the incapacity of more than 3 days due to health condition? And then asks him, leaves him a blank to describe it, and he describes bronchitis.
I mean, isn't it more likely that the doctor simply didn't completely answer the question? The answers to question 3 and 5 are either ambiguous or they would support proper certification, I'm afraid.
Well, Your Honor, again, it did not take place in a vacuum, because at the same time that the FedEx employees in Moline are considering this form, they also have the doctor's previous return to work slip, which said clearly that he was excused from work on January 2nd and could return to work on January 3rd, a duration of 1 day. So at the time that the Moline employees were examining this form with the prior return to work slip, they saw no inconsistencies They did not see an incomplete form, which is what the statute requires or the regulation requires. That is that we have a duty to interact with the employee if the form is incomplete. Our position is that the form is not incomplete.
Well, I have the same trouble as Judge Rovner. When you look at this 5A, particularly when January 1 is a holiday, I mean, why even bother filling out the form? I mean, if it, you know, in terms of conveying information, if the onset is the holiday, January 1st, and this, the duration is only to be January 1st, then why bother filling out the form? It's just going to be one day.
Well, you know, Your Honors, that's our position, is that the form does not establish his FMLA qualifying event. It does not establish that he was...
But I'm just saying that's why it's ambiguous.
Well, Your Honor, I'm not sure that even if it is ambiguous, that the FMLA requires FedEx to do anything that it other than what it did. The regulations require us to do something if the form is incomplete. The form is not incomplete. And as a matter of fact, 307... 825.307A precludes us from making any inquiry if the form is complete. It's the position of FedEx that the form is complete.
But you yourself said it's incomplete a minute ago. You said he didn't check the box.
It's complete, Your Honor. If you compare it to the requirements, the statutory requirements, it is complete because it gives us onset, duration, the medical statement of the diagnosis, and the fact that the employee is unable to perform the functions of his job. So looking at the statutory requirements, the form delivers that information. According to the statute, then, the form is complete. And under the regulations, we cannot question it if it's complete.
You know, on page 8 of your brief, you state that the doctor never certified to FedEx that Kaufman was incapacitated for more than 3 days.
Correct.
2 pages later, you can see that he filled out question 3C affirmatively, which clearly on its face certifies exactly that. How is that consistent? I mean, help.
Yep, Your Honor. Again, the fact that the form is inconsistently filled out, and I guess the issue I have is that it's not inconsistently filled out because it does not establish that Mr. Kaufman was entitled to FMLA leave. It does not give us, in the recital, in the narrative portion of the form, that he needs to be away from work than 3 consecutive days.
So it isn't complete. Is it complete? Or is it not complete?
It is complete because it satisfies the criteria of Section 2613 of the statute, because it delivers those 4 pieces of information.
What 4?
The onset of the condition, the duration of the condition, the medical facts supporting
the duration of the condition?
1 day, Your Honor.
So when he writes bronchitis under incapacity of more than 3 days due to a serious health condition, we shouldn't pay any attention to that.
Well, it does give rise, or could give rise, to an ambiguity within the form. Uh-huh. But I guess what I'm trying to assert is that it does not violate the statute. If it does not violate the statute, that is, if it is a complete form under the terms, under the requirements of the statute, then by regulation, FedEx could not question the validity of the form. We cannot go beyond the 4 corners of the form if the form is complete. And the completeness
comes from
the
statute. In other words, if a form is ambiguous, an employer is not statutorily obliged to clarify before denying leave. Is that really what you're saying?
The statute gives us, the regulations give us only one other scenario under which we can question the form, and that is if we question the validity of the form. And there's nothing on the face of the form that would permit FedEx at the time to question its validity. I mean, it was presented by the employee, or actually by his attorney on January 22nd. It's signed apparently by the doctor. It indicates an excused absence of 1 day. There was nothing suspect about the way the form was filled out.
He didn't get a vacation day on the 1st of January?
Right, he probably did, Your Honor.
So it's not an excused absence. It's not an absence at all.
Right. The only day he was scheduled for work that he missed was it was Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of that week, which is the 3rd, 4th, and the 5th. Now, those are the days that he is seeking to cover. Those are not the days that this form covered. So when FedEx is looking for an excuse from him to cover those 3 days, this form did not deliver that excuse. This form, along with the doctor's other return to work slip, did not excuse those 3 days. And accordingly, he was terminated on the 22nd.
And then speaking of that termination on the 22nd, there's this 15 days that he's given to return a health care certification. And so he was fired based on, I think, the hour that the form was put in, not the calendar day. So tell me where it is that the calendar day, how does the term calendar day mean we calculate it by the hour?
Right.
Well, instead of going to the end of the calendar day, because he would have certainly satisfied the requirement then, because that certainly clarified the situation.
Correct. I mean, the statute doesn't give, or the regulations don't give any guidance, particularly to laymen, about how to count the 15 days.
Right.
They gave him the forms on the 7th. They were aware that he had 15 days in which to return the documents. They simply added 15 to 7 and came up with it being due on the 22nd.
Right, but then it's the hour I'm talking about.
Right.
How do we get to the hour based on the regulation? Right. We don't give him the full calendar day.
Right.
Yeah.
I know, Your Honor, and
because this seems to be right along the lines of how you're sticking to this calculation on the days. It seems to me it's pretty rigid, inflexible sort of method, and this sort of bears that out, that you stick him with the hour.
Right. Well, Your Honor, and I'm not sure if it, you know, the hour calculation was driven by Mr. Crownover's belief that he gave it to him on the morning of the 7th, so that in his mind, again, not a legal mind.
But, of course, he didn't convey that to Mr. Kaufman.
I believe he told Mr. Kaufman, and Mr. Kaufman admits in the testimony that he knew he had 15 days in which to return
the
document.
But I'm saying he didn't know that it was calculated from the morning. He didn't say, you know, it's due in the morning, because this is happening in the morning.
Correct.
Your 15 days are calculated based on the morning. So if you come in the afternoon with this, you're too late.
Right. No,
that wasn't conveyed.
Correct, Your Honor. I don't think there was any communication to that effect. That, okay, Pete, I'm giving this to you at 7:45 in the morning, so I need it back 15 days before 7:45 in the morning. But I think the district court, although considering whether or not the 15-day rule was violated, found that whether or not the 15th day fell on the 22nd or the 23rd, the result would have been the same, because the form still would not excuse those 3 additional days, so that there was not any actual interference with Mr. Kaufman's FLMA entitlements, because he simply was not entitled to FMLA coverage with the onset of his medical condition not lasting longer than 3 days. And I think the point needs to be made that the plaintiff is trying to suggest that the fact that he was ill before missing any work should somehow be calculated and add up then to more than the 3 days the statute has required. But I think it's clear from both the statute and the regulation that the serious health condition has to occur during the time period that the employee is actually seeking leave, which means the focus here, if Mr. Kaufman is looking for leave for an excused absence on the 3rd, 4th, and 5th, that the serious health condition occur during the period that the leave is requested for, the 3rd and the 4th and the 5th. And the evidence is uncontroverted that the only time that Mr. Kaufman ever sought away from work because of an alleged serious health condition were those 3 days. So once again, he has failed to satisfy the statutory requirement that he suffer from a qualifying condition for a period lasting more than 3 days. And in my final moments, Your Honor, I'd just like to address one central fact. Plaintiff only allegedly turned in one form prior to January 22nd, and that was the healthcare certification form, not 2 forms. And there might be some confusion, because there is an eligibility document that the management personnel fill out, and then there's a separate document, which is this healthcare provider certification form, which is filled out by the healthcare provider. And it was the latter form that Mr. Kaufman says he went into Mr. Crownover's desk and left the document underneath the stapler. But there's been no testimony that that document ever got into the hands of Mr. Crownover before he received it via fax from Mr. Kaufman's lawyer on January 22nd. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Crittell. How much time? 2 minutes.
The FMLA regulations by Department of Labor foresee a situation where doctors fill out documents like this, healthcare certification forms, at night, in their hurry, what have you, and don't fill them out completely or fill them out ambiguously. This document doesn't contain 2 points, one, the duration under paragraph 5, but does contain stating that it's three days, as this court's pointed out. Under those regulations, if a healthcare certification is incomplete, ambiguous, anything other than a complete one, then the employer must notify the employee that your certification is inadequate, and he must give the employee a reasonable opportunity to cure the defect. That didn't happen here.
That regulation doesn't say that. It only references certifications that are incomplete, not those that are inadequate,
right,
or insufficient or ambiguous.
We're saying that with regards to a certification that doesn't have duration marked on it,
okay,
paragraph 5, that certification falls within section 305D because it's incomplete.
Because it's a multiple part question
multiple
with
part
a singular
question. Right,
answer.
And at the very least, it's an ambiguous, confusing certification which needs clarification, and again, 305D kicks in. So this is not that kind of certification where it's sufficient as the statute is defined, and nothing more is needed to add to it, as in Stoops, for instance. This certification doesn't comply with that kind of situation.
So
the employer who sees a certification, and first of all, they didn't rely on the certification in this termination anyway. We're dealing with a fiction. But in any event, because they maintain they never received it, so they weren't relying on it when they terminated him.
If you could just answer the last comment that he made, that is that January 1 was a vacation day, so 2, 3, and 4 only add up to 3 days. And
those are three work days.
Right. And the statute only kicks in if it's three or more. How do you get over that hurdle?
The statute says a person must be ill for three or more calendar days. He was ill on January 1st. In fact, the addendum takes him to January 6th.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the certification takes him from January 1 through the 3rd.
So your view is that just because it's a holiday, it doesn't mean
right,
that
or a weekend.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
So a person, say, on a Friday could get sick on a Friday and be out through Monday, and that's three or more calendar days. In this case, it was a holiday, January 1st, where the onset was carried him through the rest of the week, actually through just Saturday, when the doctor certified that he was able to come back to work on the 7th.
Does it say three or more than three?
More than three, if my recollection's right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen, very much. The case will be taken under advisement, and we're going to take a little break.